Is there anything more grounding than walking barefoot on the sand? That feeling of the earth beneath you, the ocean lapping at your feet, and that feeling of connection to something bigger. Now, astronauts have a name for this. They call it the overview effect, that awe-filled moment when they look down at Earth from space and experience a deep sense of connection and belonging. Okay, that might sound a bit fanciful, like space poetry. After all, not every astronaut's going to return to Earth and become an environmentalist. And yet, when I dip my feet into the ocean and look out at the endless horizon, you know what? I can relate. The term overview effect was coined in the late 1980s. Almost 40 years later, the view of Earth has changed. Today, astronauts might see melting glaciers, burning forests, and an atmosphere so thin, it looks like a soap bubble. But we don't have to travel to space to see how global warming is transforming our planet or how humans are impacting nature. You know how I mentioned walking along the beach, barefoot? Well, in 2025, Greenpeace researchers discovered something alarming along the shores of the North and Baltic seas. They found seafoam containing elevated levels of PFAS, so-called forever chemicals. They're toxic and they bioaccumulate. And they're not just found in the water where we swim, but also in the clothes that we wear. Welcome to The Fashion Stitch, a new podcast on fabrics, facts and feelings, brought to you by Erkatex, where we start conversations on sustainability in fashion. I'm your host, Claire Press, a fashion journalist and storyteller and self-confessed sustainability nerd. In this episode, we're going to be unpacking a very big topic, that of chemicals in our clothing. So, how much do you know about the sorts of chemicals that might be used in textile dyeing and finishing? It's a complicated topic, this one, but we're bringing you insider knowledge from experts in the field to look at what is safe, what's necessary, what you might not know, and how you can be confident in what you're buying. Let's clear something up right away. Not all chemicals are harmful. In fact, many are essential in textile production. But PFAS, the forever chemicals we just talked about, they're a major exception. So I want to take a step back to understand what PFAS really are. PFAS is short for per- and polyfluoroalkyl substances. And these are synthetic chemicals that are known for being extremely resistant to water, grease and dirt, and also heat. And that's why they're found in a lot of everyday products. So things like non-stick pans, baking paper, pizza boxes, disturbingly, food wrappers, but also detergents, cosmetics and clothing, such as performance clothing. Think about rain gear, but also safety clothing. Now, they're known as forever chemicals because they break down extremely slowly in the environment. And remember, we're talking about chemicals here that are suspected to cause cancer, disrupt hormones, and impair fertility. So how do PFAS end up in seafoam? It's hard to trace exactly where they come from. It could be through industrial wastewater, treatment plants that can't fully filter them out, or even leachate that seeps out of landfills. And yes, that is as gross as it sounds. But guess what? PFAS have also been detected in our drinking water. Ooh. Often in areas where agricultural land has been fertilized with industrial waste containing toxic sludge. I'll give you an example. Society Hill is a small American town in the northwestern part of South Carolina. For 50 years, it was home to Gailey and Lord, a textile dyeing and finishing factory famous for making khakis. You know, loose fit, straight cut, classic pants made from a heavy cotton twill. Today, Society Hill is a toxic wasteland. You can see this on YouTube. Videos show the abandoned plant, rubble everywhere, broken window glass, crumbling walls and cables hanging from the ceiling. and then trees and bushes gradually overtaking the ruins. Now, the factory closed in 2016, but its chemical legacy lingers. Over 10,000 hectares of farmland contaminated with PFAS. And if you can't see that in your mind's eye, picture this. That is the equivalent of more than 14,000 football fields. On some of this agricultural land, food is still being grown. And yes, that food ends up in grocery stores. Meanwhile, local residents are urged not to drink their well water, brush their teeth with it, or even cook with it. Okay, remember I said about the sludge. For decades, the textile plant supplied local farmers with free fertilizer, a byproduct of treated wastewater from its facility. That sludge was used to fertilize the fields, and it was found to contain very high levels of PFAS. Now, in 2018, when Hurricane Florence hit, several waste bins in the site overflowed, and more PFAS-contaminated water spilled into the nearby rivers. In 2022, the factory was declared a Superfund site, which means that it will be cleaned up as part of a federal program. But this is going to take years. Now, if you want to read more about this, there's some fantastic coverage out there by the New York Times journalist Hiroko Tobuchi, who reported on the case and spoke with farmers and residents in the area. And I highly recommend her article. We'll link it in the show notes. PFAS have been widely used in the fashion industry, especially for outdoor gear and sports apparel. But would you believe they don't have to be labelled? Now, all this makes me wonder about my own favourite water-repellent jacket. Can I still wear it? Would wearing it be harmful? Or is there simply a better alternative out there already? Let's ask Dr. Jörg Schletterer, Deputy Division Manager of the Erkatext Department of Hohenstein Laboratories. Hohenstein is an international service provider specializing in testing, certifying, and researching textile products, including for chemical substances and harmful chemicals.
PFAS were used in the past, for sure, especially with outdoor equipment, rain clothes and rain jackets, trousers, and maybe also tents or something like that. But the worst PFAS were phased out years ago. And in the meantime, we only find really small amounts, really small residues, where I don't see the imminent danger for the customer. In general, there's far too much of PFAS around us, that's for sure. But textiles is not the part that I'm worried most. So we need some PFAS and we still use them in PPE, for example, for clothing for firefighters. And there we use it, there we still need it because the danger from the fire is greater than the danger from the chemical. But in everyday fashion, it's not an issue. I also have a rain jacket, older one, and most probably there's still some PFAS on it. I still wear it. I'm not afraid of that jacket. PFAS is already produced. It's in the world. We never get rid of it. So why throw it away? I rather wear it and use it so that it's not produced for nothing.
I'm pretty relieved to hear that we don't need to be afraid of PFAS in everyday clothes. Nevertheless, PFAS are extremely dangerous, especially when they're found in our oceans, our farmland, our drinking water, and might end up in our bodies. But there is good news. There are actually a number of regulations coming into place to ban PFAS. Some are stricter than others. Let's start with the US state of California, which has passed a law broadly banning the use of PFAS in clothing and textiles. There is an exception, though. Outdoor clothing designed for extreme weather conditions will be exempt until 2028. But even those products will still need to carry a label, starting in 2025, that reads, made with PFAS chemicals. So this is good. Okay, well, what about the European Union? A regulation is expected to come into force on October the 10th, 2026, banning certain PFAS in textiles, especially in clothing, footwear, and waterproofing treatments. There are some exceptions here too, for things like personal protective equipment and medical devices. Countries like France are moving faster than the EU as a whole and plan to outright ban forever chemicals in clothing and cosmetics starting as early as 2026. If you see the Erkotex label, you can trust that it's free from harmful levels of PFAS. Since April 2023, Erkotex has banned the intentional use of PFAS in textiles, leather, and footwear, with a few exceptions like protective clothing used in firefighting gear. Okay, PFAS are just one class of chemicals used in the fashion industry. And like I said, not all chemicals are automatically harmful, and many are necessary. Consider colour. If you want that shirt in bright cherry red, it's synthetic dyes. Or in bright white? Well, then bleachers are used. You like the drape of that dress? How do you think they turn the trees into pulp to make the viscose? The truth is, chemicals will always be used in textile production. They improve the functionality, durability, and comfort of textiles. They make fabrics more resistant to stains and moisture, and they help keep the colours of your favourite sweater looking bright and shiny. But where exactly are chemicals used in the production of our clothes? And how do we know which ones are safe? Here's Jörg Schletterer from Hohenstein again.
If you're asking a chemist, everything is chemistry or chemicals. But if we take a cotton shirt, for example, then we can start with biology, with the cotton plant. But soon after the harvest, the fibers are spun into longer fibers, into yarns. And here they come in the first contact with chemicals. So they are using oils and waxes so that they do not get tangled up in the machines. And this is the first contact with chemicals that are later washed away from the fibers, from the yarns, but still some residues can remain on the fibers, and also maybe harmful substances like PAH, which is polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, or APO, alkyl phenolate hexalate, they can be there. But as I said before, usually they are washed away afterwards. Then the yarn is bleached so that you get a real clean and white cotton yarn. Here, usually no harmful substances are involved, so to say, or they are easily washed out. And then comes the knitting or weaving. Here we have the same oils and waxes as with the spinning process. And after that, usually the dyeing. Dyeing is very chemically intensive process step. So we have the dyes, we have some dye auxiliaries and so on. I would say this is the most important part regarding harmful substances. We have the bent azo dyes that could be present, or also some dyeing auxiliaries, chlorinated benzenes and toluenes, carriers in short, that could be introduced here to the textile. And then afterwards, maybe also printing with dyes, and then the t-shirt is ready. If you have a look to a business shirt, for example, then there might be some finishes, some easy care finishes that might contain formaldehyde that could be a source for contamination. Or if you have a softener finish, so that it's a softer feel for the fabric, there might also be some contaminations with harmful substances, but those softeners are not the softeners that we know from plastic softeners. So it's not the phthalates that are used here. Those are other substances. So there are a lot of chemicals used, but it doesn't mean that necessarily there are harmful substances in the textile afterwards. There might be some contaminations, but it's contamination. So it's not intentionally used there. And in general, there's no real danger coming from the textiles.
Those were some really complicated sounding chemicals that Jörg has just mentioned. I took some notes. Let's recap. Polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, alkyl phenolate hexalate, azo dyes, dye carriers such as chlorinated benzene and toluenes, formaldehyde, and phthalates. Now remember, not all chemicals are dangerous or harmful, and I absolutely understand the instinct to run a mile when you hear about this stuff, but obviously we're talking about a massive spectrum here, and also years of research and development and regulation. That being said, there are still harmful substances being used today in the textile industry. The poster child has to be azo dyes, banned in many countries, though not the one I live in, Australia, would you believe? Azo dyes are still being used in dyeing and printing, despite clear evidence that they can be carcinogenic. And while it's true that many chemicals are long gone before the finished garment hits the stores, remember that someone, somewhere, has to apply them and ultimately wash them out. Jörg Schletterer told us that the residual risk, while unavoidable, is very low. And if appropriate, state-of-the-art processes are used in production and workers are trained about the hazards. Unfortunately, though, we do know that working conditions when handling harmful chemicals can be inadequate and workers do get exposed to harmful substances. We'll be taking a closer look at this in our upcoming episode on worker safety. It's time for a quick break to explain who is behind this podcast that you're listening to and hopefully enjoying so far. The Fashion Stitch is brought to you by Erkatex. If you're a label reader, like me, you've probably seen this name in your clothing or home textiles. It represents safer, more sustainable choices. For over 30 years, Erkatex has been testing and certifying textiles. With education at heart and grounded in science, Erkatex aims to promote sustainability in the fashion industry and drive positive change. The Fashion Stitch came to life through a beautiful collaboration between Erkatex and the education and community platform Fashion Changers. For more than a decade, its co-founders, Freni Jekler and Nina Lorentzen, have been working to educate and advocate for a more sustainable and more just fashion industry. They're all about sharing collective knowledge and raising awareness for the sometimes hidden problems, but also the solutions in this industry. I could not love this more. I'm so excited to be part of it. Now, if you'd like to dive deeper, check the show notes for all the links or sign up to the Erkatex newsletter for extra background on this episode and from our experts. And now, back to the show. Chemical regulations and textile labels are meant to protect us from dangerous chemicals in our clothing. Since 2007, the REACH regulation has been in place for European products. REACH stands for Registration, Evaluation, and Authorization of Chemicals. In short, it regulates all the chemicals in the EU and is designed to protect our health and the environment from risks that chemicals might pose. So, how does it work? Let's break it down. Companies that manufacture, import, or market chemicals into the EU must register the chemicals they use and submit toxicological data to the European Chemical Agency. These chemicals are then evaluated by the agency and either approved, restricted, or banned. If you're curious, you can look all this up. In Annex 17, you'll find a list of restricted substances for which manufacture, placing on the market, or use is limited or banned in the European Union. It covers over 30 individual chemicals that could be present in textiles and clothing, such as phthalates or heavy metals. And by the way, many non-EU countries have now copied REACH. In the US, the Toxic Substances Control Act, TSCA, serves a similar purpose. That regulates production, use and import of chemicals into the United States. Here's Jörg Schletterer again, explaining why, despite regulations, clothing with chemicals that exceed the legal value can still be found from time to time.
Why are there still chemicals that have higher limits than allowed? Some do it intentionally and some do it unintentionally. So those doing it intentionally may have the reason that it's cheaper to buy, let's say, dirty chemicals or use dirty chemicals that are contaminated with those harmful substances. And the other ones doing it unintentionally, maybe they do not know about the limit values, especially if you have them produced outside of Europe. Maybe they are not aware of the limit values that we have in Europe. So they do it with goodwill. But when they are importing or exporting the textiles to Europe, then suddenly they are prohibited. Every player in the market also has this chance or the duty to test. You're not allowed to just trust your supplier. You also have to make sure that your supplier is really trustworthy. So from time to time, they have to test on their own. But those usually are only spot checks. If you test everything, every t-shirt would have a hole in it. And so in the end, it's a mixture between trust and testing. And I would say in most cases, it's all fine. But sometimes something happens.
Thankfully, more and more companies are choosing to phase out harmful chemicals voluntarily, especially since Greenpeace launched the Detox My Fashion campaign, pushing companies to eliminate hazardous chemicals. Yet, positive impacts can be cancelled out by overproduction. When we're producing billions more garments, we're also ramping up the amount of harmful chemicals used. At the same time, new chemicals are constantly being developed, often faster than regulations can keep up. So, when we're buying clothes, we kind of have to trust that certain limits aren't being exceeded. And I'm going to say, it's not entirely in our hands. That's why textile labels to test for harmful substances are so important. Clothing certified with the Erkatex Standard 100 or the Made in Green label has been tested for the most critical chemicals, so you can feel safer about what you're wearing. At Hohenstein Laboratories, over 1,000 chemicals are being tested. Now, if you're interested in which ones, you'll find a link in the show notes. Many of us probably start thinking about harmful chemicals in our clothing for the very first time when we buy clothes for children. Caring for a sensitive little human, we suddenly get cautious about what's on their skin. And we're not wrong to do that. There have been regular product recalls, from nickel found in baby pyjamas to chromium 6 in kids' leather shorts, and critical levels of azo dyes found lurking in the prints on a kid's shirt line, to name but a few. Of course, these cases seem especially alarming when kids are impacted, but they should also make us think more broadly about what we all put next to our skin, which is, after all, our largest organ. We asked Jörg Schletterer from Hohenstein to assess the potential health risks associated with getting dressed. How high are these risks really, including for babies and children?
There's no imminent health risk from the chemicals with our clothes. Yes, during production of the textiles, they come in contact with chemicals. They might also come in contact with harmful chemicals. But this is not a real danger for us in our everyday clothing. If you have a look at the EU's safety gate, clothing, textile and fashion items were on fifth place in 2023 with 8% recalls. In 2024, it was less. It was below 6% summed up in other product categories. And if you go deeper into that report, it was mainly physical danger that's accompanied with the textile. So suffocation, strangulation, choking, or injuries, mostly connected to children's textiles. And only 30% were because of chemical risks. So the chemical danger coming from the textile is rather low. Still, there is some risk, for sure. It's not that there are no harmful substances or harmful chemicals in our textiles, but the risk is rather low. It's mainly absorption. Only a very small number of the harmful substances is volatile. So spontaneously, only formaldehyde came to my mind. That's volatile, that could be inhaled. All the others are not evaporating. So you have them on your skin, or you absorb them via the skin, which also clearly says that only those that are close to the skin are dangerous, so to say. So it's mainly underwear, socks, maybe close-fitting sport items that are the main source of exposure, especially if it's connected with heat and sweat. Then there might be some danger. Children have for sure the higher risk for exposure. In general, the developing body is more vulnerable to chemical interference. And then the children have a higher surface to volume ratio, so to say. So more square meter of skin per kilogram of body weight. So they are more in danger. And especially if you have the small children, the babies, because they suck on everything. So they're touching it and they're sucking on it. And then you do not only have absorption via the skin, but also via the mucosa or the digestive system. And then looping back to the to the physical dangers, which are mainly accompanied with a children's article, just have a look at it and touch it. So if you see long cord strings, for example, this might be a danger for the children when they are playing around on the playground. And also if there are some small parts, tug on them. If they come away easily, it's also possible for your child to take them apart and then swallow it.
All in all, Jörg recommends looking for high quality and, if possible, certified products to ensure product safety. He also advises washing clothing that's worn directly on the skin before we wear it, as well as checking children's clothing for potentially dangerous items such as long cords. Okay, we've spent a lot of time talking about the potential dangers of chemicals in clothing. Now it's time to look at some of the environmentally friendly alternatives. Dr. Katie Stevens is an expert in this field, with a background in materials science and a PhD in textile chemistry. She is head of CSR and sustainability at the European Outdoor Group, an industry association and platform for pre-competitive collaboration for outdoor brands, retailers, and everyone involved in the outdoor value chains. Katie, what can you tell us about some of the innovations that look set to replace harmful chemical treatments in textiles and clothing?
A lot of the chemistry that we see in the industry, it's based on very old technologies, and there's a lot of innovation happening in these areas at the moment. So, for example, if we think about dyes and coloration. So color is another big area. Traditional dyeing uses huge amounts of water, energy, and chemicals. And certain dyes, like some azo dyes, can release hazardous substances when they're in production. What we're seeing here is we're seeing a huge amount of innovation around things like plant-based dyes. So not just from traditional plants that have been used in the past, like indigo, but from agricultural byproducts like onion skins, walnut shells, and even pomegranate peels. So some of these new innovations are actually kind of going one step further. So it's not just about extracting resource and using them as dyes. It's actually about using waste. So some dyes can be extracted as waste from the food industry, for example. We also have huge amounts of innovation around microbial dyes. So things like using bacteria or yeast or even algae to grow colour, which is being done quite a lot. There are a number of UK companies and also European companies who are actually doing this, using microbes to produce pigments, which are then applied without harmful auxiliary chemicals like the fixatives and the mordants that we often see in traditional dyeing. We're also seeing other innovations, not around the kind of materials that we're using to make the dyes, but around the processing. So there's a fairly new technique called solution dyeing. So historically, fabrics were made and then dyed. And in solution dyeing, the colour is added at the polymer stage. So when the fibres are extruded, they are actually extruded in the colour that they will be. And this can cut huge amounts of water and energy, because it's usually in these dyeing processes where the water and the energy are being used. It also reduces chemical runoff, because we're not having the kind of the dyes and the effluent then washing out during the process. So we're seeing great performance. We're seeing rich, long-lasting colour, but without the toxic legacy that has been very prominent in the industry in the past.
It's so great to hear that there is rapid innovation happening, replacing some of these conventional dyes. But what about some of the other chemicals? How about formaldehyde?
So formaldehyde is a chemical that's also used quite widely in the industry. It's used a lot for anti-crease and wrinkle-free technologies. So, you know, in the old days, everyone had to iron all the time, and people just don't do that anymore because they don't need to. But formaldehyde can be very, very toxic, and the vapors that are released are also linked to a number of health risks. We're seeing a lot of formaldehyde-free resins that are being used these days based on polycarboxylic acids that achieve similar results but without the chemical legacy. So they're much more safer. Apart from substituting chemistry for chemistry, we're also seeing different fibres that just don't have that propensity to crease in the first place. So there's kind of two approaches to phasing out the chemistry. One is a straightforward substitution, but the other approach is a much more innovative replacement techniques.
I love that. There's so much work being done around innovation and so many passionate people developing more sustainable solutions. And last but not least, I think we all want to know, are there alternatives for PFAS out there on the market already?
I think there's actually a lot of innovation around PFAS at the moment, which I think is really exciting. We're seeing real momentum in the development of new, more sustainable technologies that can still deliver on performance. Brands and suppliers have been investing heavily in research, and it's starting to pay off. We're seeing finishes made of kind of different chemistries. We're seeing different approaches. Again, I think there's the kind of two routes. There's the straightforward substitution route, which is new chemistries, PFAS-free chemistries that are starting to emerge and starting to scale quite rapidly within the industry. But we're also starting to see a number of innovations. So we're seeing things like textured fabric surfaces, which help the water to bead. So it's called the lotus effect, and it's what you see in the lotus leaves when the water beads up on the leaves. And that's because of very, very small kind of surface dimples, which then cause the water droplets to bead on the top. It's a fact that the repellence of PFAS is much higher than many other substrates. So with the substitution, there is always a loss in functionality. I think when we talk about substitutions, we need to also think about how the products are being used. And the reality is that many products are completely over-engineered for what consumers need anyway. So we've been covering things in PFAS for decades now because the highest level was possible, not necessarily because it was needed. Most people, if the weather's terrible, many people just don't go outside. You know, behavioral responses often come before clothing needs. I think the people who really need these high performance garments are actually the dog walkers, because they're the people who are out in any weather, regardless of whether it's a storm or whether it's raining and hailing. But the many, many people, most garments are completely over-engineered for them in any case.
So what Katie Stevens is saying is that in some cases, as with PFAS, by reducing the chemistry, the longevity of the garment might also be reduced. Now, at the same time, we probably don't need all our clothes to be super repellent because we're never using the full functionality of them anyway. Let's think back to the beginning for a moment. Do you remember I mentioned my old rain jacket and asked if I could still wear it? The short answer is yes, but with a bit more awareness. If you own waterproof clothing, it doesn't mean you need to throw it out. For those who love buying secondhand for various reasons, it can also be a smart option when it comes to this. Over time, many of the chemicals used in production either off-gas or are washed out. So pre-loved clothing can actually be safer for you in that regard, although it's still an imperfect choice, right? I'd say that overall, if we want safer clothing, the best idea is to look out for fashion brands that clearly value transparency, responsibility, and good quality. We can also look out for some of the innovations that Katie told us about. And as our experts have been saying, it's worth asking ourselves, do we really need that high-performance, water-repellent gear? Not every day is a hiking day. And I don't know, if you're walking to the shops, does it really matter if you get a little wet from the rain? Are we being sold performance features that we don't actually use, but that come with a hidden environmental cost? Now, it's clear that when we talk about chemical safety, baby and children's clothing often gets in the spotlight for very good reason. Their skin is more sensitive, plus their exposure risks are higher, and babies like to put things in their mouths. But I hope this episode has shown you that product safety isn't just about kids. It's about all of us. Every one of us wears clothes, and every one of us has skin in the game, quite literally. Thank you for tuning in to The Fashion Stitch on fabrics, facts, and feelings. If you'd like a deeper dive into the topic, check out the links in the show notes, or you can sign up for the Erkatex newsletter to get even more background information on this episode. In the next episode, we'll be looking at transparency, fashion consumption, and traceability in fashion. Wherever you're listening right now, don't forget to follow or subscribe to this podcast. It also really helps us get the word out and spread more awareness about what's happening behind the curtain of the fashion industry. The Fashion Stitch is brought to you by Erkatex in partnership with Fashion Changers. Executive producer, Erkatex. Idea and concept, Franny Yekler and Nina Lawrenson from Fashion Changers. Content editor and editorial for this episode was by Nina Lawrenson. Production, sound design and editing, Studio Ton Gutzer. Podcast cover design, also Franny Yekler. Production, Erkatex and Fashion Changers. And I'm your host, Claire Press. Special thanks to our expert guests for sharing their stories and to everyone behind the scenes who made this episode possible. And thank you for listening to The Fashion Stitch. I'll hear you soon.